The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
The advice and opinions expressed by the host of Autism Live and her guests are meant solely as suggestion and should not be in any way construed as child-specific advice. Any choices you make in determining your child's treatment are completely at your own discretion.
Dr. Doreen Grand-Pichet is the...
Dr. Doreen is an expert in autism.
Doreen Grand-Pichet.
Dr. Grand-Pichet.
Dr. Doreen Grand-Pichet.
Dr. Doreen Grand-Pichet is a visionary in the field of autism. Now you can ask her questions on Ask Dr. Doreen.
Good morning and welcome to Ask Dr. Doreen. I'm Shannon Penrod, and I'm here with the fabulous, the stunningly beautiful, the brilliantly intelligent Dr. Doreen Grand-Pichet. And can you tell I'm a little excited
to
be here?
Can I stop you before you... Good morning, everyone.
I know. I never let her talk. Guests always come on the show, and they're like, well, I'm not sure... if they've never been on a show before, and they're like, I'm not sure I'm going to know what to say. And I say, oh, bless your heart. You think I'm going to let you get a word in edgewise? Because I overtalk everyone, including Dr. Grand-Pichet.
No, not that. I'm just letting you embarrass me. You're too kind. Thank you.
No. But thrilled to be here with you guys. We're going to be live for the next hour. For those of you who don't know her, Dr. Grand-Pichet is a true expert in the field of autism. She's been working in this field for over 40 years. Over 40. I'm not saying 14, y'all. I'm saying 40 years. And it's more than 40 years.
Yeah.
And she's been working in this field, working with all kinds of individuals on the spectrum, from very young babies up through senior citizens, and of course, everything in between. Mm-hmm. Young kids, young tweens, teens, young adults, and adults. So she has a wealth of knowledge and truly has been a visionary for so many of us. Because not only, I think that you're really good at perspective taking, and I know we're going to talk about perspective taking today, but not only is she good at taking the perspective of our kids and our teens and our adults and helping to advocate for them, because she's a world-renowned advocate for people on the spectrum, but also for the people who love them. And if you watch this show and if you watch stuff on the Autism Network, we're all about that, the people on the spectrum and the people who love them. Yeah. That's really the ticket. So she's here with us for this next hour. She donates her time to be here to answer your questions in real time. The chat is open. We already have some questions, and I'm saying good morning to a bunch of people. But I want you to know that we never get through all of the questions. I apologize. I also want you to know, a little disclaimer, that there is no expert in any field who can give individual specific advice in this particular format. That would be a disservice to the individual, right? Because they don't have eyes on the situation. So Dr. Grand-Pichet then can't do that. But what she can do is, if you write in and give us a bunch of information about you or a loved one, and it be as specific as possible, I will give her those questions, as many as we can fit in, and she will give you all kinds of information that you can take back to the experts who have eyes on the situation in the moment. Can I also, there are a couple of things that a little housekeeping that I got to do here
please,
at the start
right
of the show.
Ahead.
Because we haven't done a live show in a couple of days. I had my 20th wedding anniversary the other day, so I've taken a few days off. It's been great.
First of all, happy anniversary.
Thank you. 20 years.
That's
it's nothing
amazing.
To sneeze at, right?
It's amazing.
It's pretty impressive. And there are all these statistics that I don't support or believe in about people who are parents of individuals who have unique needs that, you know, they can't stay married. Is what I say to you. We 20 years, we managed it. If we can do it, trust me, anybody can.
Yeah.
And that's not true. It's hard.
It's hard work.
Hard work, and both people have to be up for it, because if one of them isn't, forget it. But anyway, we've been away for a couple of days. So I have to tell you that we have a friend that's a friend of the show and a friend of our family. Her name is Emily, and she is somebody who is uniquely abled. And she's having a really rough time right now.
Oh.
She's been in and out of the hospital for several months. Her mom's had a rough time because she has a sister who also has unique needs. Mm-hmm. And mom is a single mom and has been having to go back and forth to the hospital. And what we need right now are cards and letters for Emily to perk her up.
Oh.
She hasn't been able to eat, and eating hurts really bad.
Oh, my gosh.
And so we need her to be invested in eating. So if you have a moment today and would like to write to Emily, you can send the cards and letters here to us. You can email them to me. You can send them to our mailing address. We'll make sure to post that. Or you can go on my personal Facebook right now. They're also taking them at the Ed Asner Family Center. If you want to donate gas cards to mom to help her to get back and forth too, we really appreciate it. But Emily has been a dear friend to a lot of us. She's one of the sweetest souls, and we really need to perk her up.
Yeah.
You know, get her excited, let her know that people haven't forgotten about her while she's been in and out of the hospital. So that. I also want to say that a dear friend who is a novelist in her own right, writes great books, as a favor to me, purchased my book because she was like, I want to support you. But she said, I know that there are other people besides me who could use this book. So she has said she would like to donate the book to someone. And she will mail it to you. So the very first person who emails me, and I'll check my email later on, my email is shannon@autism-live.com. Kelly is going to mail you a copy of my book as free.
That's awesome.
It will arrive to you.
That's
so the
so
first
nice.
Person watching live who emails me, shannon@autism-live.com.
Lovely.
Thank you for putting up with me for a minute.
Oh, no, not at all. I love those. Well, I mean, I'm sad for Emily, and I'll definitely write her a card.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
But that's
that.
So wonderful that your friend
yes.
Kelly bought
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah, that's
okay.
a great idea.
So in any case, we wanted to start with, and everybody's saying good morning. I'm saying hi to Ka. Brian, good morning, and other people who didn't send me their names. But and if you want to write in and tell us where you're watching, we love to hear where you're watching from. So, but we wanted to start today talking about this
yep.
a very hot topic
yep. Yep.
in the autism community. Sometimes
Thank
people
you.
Will say something or post something, mm-hmm. whether it's a parent or a professional, and then you know, people take exception. We have, I always say, a wonderful group of people called self-advocates who are amazing because they have the ability to communicate mm-hmm. and communicate their needs and say what they want to say. Except that sometimes they really don't want others to say their opinions or what they want to say.
That's true.
Or they take exception to them. Now, my policy has always been on this show, come, bring whatever your thoughts are, whatever your mm-hmm. feelings are, but keep it respectful. It doesn't always stay that way. I want you to talk about what's
yeah.
been going on.
And I really love that sentiment, Shannon, because we do all have different views and we're different people. We're
yes.
different people.
We should have different views.
Absolutely. And everybody has the right to have a different view, right? But unfortunately, one of the things that tends to happen, I think it's a combination on social media. Something that happens is that, first of all, you're hidden. Like,
yeah.
you're not in someone's face, so you're much more courageous to be rude, if that makes sense. So there, and the second thing is that that just has become like a common thing. It's like, who can I bash next
yeah.
type thing. Someone actually wrote to me. So I, you know, as a lot of our viewers know, what I try to do, one of the ways that I try to help people is that I answer questions on all of the social media platforms. And it actually takes quite a bit of time because there's a lot of questions coming in and I make videos about lots of different things and I summarize, you know, new findings and all that sort of stuff. And I'm trying to help the autism community as a whole by doing that.
You're an amazing resource.
Well, thank you. I appreciate
yes.
that. But, you know, the fact of the matter is that there are certain things that I, after 44 years of working in this field, I promote. One of those things is good applied behavior analysis, ABA. And there is a group of people who are just against ABA in general. And there are a few people who feel like they've had ABA in the past and they are somehow have been tortured by ABA. And I don't deny them their experience. In fact, in one of my videos, I said, I did say that I completely see that there has been some sort of trauma, or I see it that from their perspective there's been something bad going on. But that isn't my journey on social media, and I do not want to get involved with those types of arguments about, you know, is ABA this or is ABA that, and talking about individual people's issues with it. Yeah. From my perspective, good ABA is just a really good teaching technique. Yeah. And you don't have to have ABA. Just like, you know, some people choose not to learn how to play a musical instrument. Some people choose not to learn how to wash their clothes, how to cook.
Or a third language. Yeah.
And in this case, it's fine if you, as the individual, or your parents, when you were younger, decide, no, I want this, I want to be autistic, and I want to live with those characteristics, period. That's totally fine. But it goes back to two things. One is there are a lot of people who do struggle with a diagnosis of autism, whether they're extremely high-functioning adults who've also come to me for help, and can't feel like they can't fit into a social environment, et cetera, and have questions about how to find friends, how to have partnerships, how to find a job, et cetera. And or if you're the parent of a child, let's say, who is severely autistic. And I think a lot of the individuals right now on social media don't really understand what it's like to, you know, the severe side of autism. And in fact, maybe I should do a video about the fact that there's a lot of parents who say, we want to separate severe autism because, like, all this stuff about we don't need help. Let me tell you, someone who has severe autism does need help. Yes. They do need treatment. And so that, you know, I don't want the folks who are against intervention for autism to influence the folks who are desperate for help. So that's one side of it. And the other side of it, Shannon, as you said, is just respect. It's just a matter of being respectful. And if I am talking to an individual who has autism, if they're disrespectful, I will tell them. Yes. I won't be harsh, but I will tell them. And I will call them out. And I will say, it's not appropriate for you to put 60 videos that are kind of rude and inappropriate on my site. I will block you because you're taking this, my mission, you're derailing my mission, let's put it that way. My mission right now for spending time on social media is to be able to help people, not to get into a fight with someone who has a very a significant difficulty seeing someone else's perspective. Yeah. So that's kind of what's been going on. If any of our viewers are on TikTok, or I would really welcome your support on there because I'm trying to kind of keep the whole thing on the right path. I was in the middle of doing a bunch of videos on anxiety and depression and what we experience as parents.
Yes.
And this whole thing has kind of derailed it a little bit, so I'm trying to take it back there and answer questions that are important to people who are waiting.
But I so appreciate you saying this. And I, because I know you, and I know that it comes from a place of ultimate respect.
Absolutely.
And a lot of times, you know, okay, here's a perfect example that a dear friend of ours, who is a self-advocate on the spectrum, was writing in somebody had posted something about a death in the family. And he was writing in and asking very pointed, specific questions on social media about, well, you know, what was the death like and all these things, because he was curious.
Right.
But it wasn't appropriate.
Right.
And so I wrote in and said, publicly, in front of everybody, said, perhaps you should ask these questions
privately.
And then three moms wrote to me and said, are you aware of the fact that he's on the spectrum?
Yeah.
And I wrote back and I said, yes, but he has asked me if he's doing something in public that is not appropriate, would I please tell him?
Right.
Now, I could have done it privately. I absolutely could have. That would have been a choice. But he had said to me, no, please tell
me. Just tell me, call me out.
Because I think there are a lot of people who are on the spectrum who are like, I don't know what the rules are.
Right.
And
right.
I would like it if you just tell me if I've stepped over a rule. I'm not on the spectrum. I would like that.
Yeah.
If I stepped over the rule and I would like for somebody to tell me, you know, there's a rule here that you don't do this.
Mm-hmm.
And then I go, oh, I did not know.
Yeah.
We don't have to be defensive about it. But I think that there are a lot of us, myself included, that sometimes get into, you know, I can remember when I was younger that and when Jem was younger that it was like, oh, is this who he is or is this the autism? I don't want to penalize him or make him feel bad because he's done something that has to do with autism. But sometimes we carry it too far, you guys.
Yeah.
And we excuse behavior and we don't call it out and go, that doesn't work here.
Yeah.
That's not appropriate. Because we're like, well, you know, it's the autism. But as you say all the time, that's not part of the diagnosis.
That's exactly my point, Shannon. In fact, I've talked to lots and lots of parents when they're, when they have young children and they're working with their children. And I tell them, if you want your child to fit into society, you need to curtail their behavior so that they fit into society. Do not allow them to do behaviors or exhibit behaviors or things that are going to isolate them from society, and treat them normally. Don't walk around them on eggshells. You know, don't be so cautious that. And that's the thing. It's like I actually called out one person, and all I did on this platform was to explain to them that blaming me for their prior experiences is what's called a cognitive distortion. It is what our mind does, because we often need someone to blame. And I understand that I represent the field of ABA and that it gives this person some sense of relief to blame me. But it's not adaptive. It's not fun. It doesn't do anything.
You're not going to get anything out of it.
You're going to get some immediate relief, and that's about it.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, you're derailing this whole platform, which has to do with helping people, right?
Yeah.
So I'm going to call you out, and I'm going to say, please don't blame me.
Yeah.
Move on. Like, we understand that you have issues, but it has nothing to do with me. And then there's even a doctor on there who has come on and said, I can't believe you called her out. And of course I'm going to call. Because nobody does. And that is, by the way, the only way this is going to work. Because in the future, going through life, if we just excuse people's behavior, all we're doing, and this is the truth, Shannon, all we're doing is we're saying, I'm going to excuse you, but I'm not going to include you.
That's right.
And I don't want that. I want there to be a place for every individual who has autism in our society.
Right.
And for that to happen, everybody has to be polite, period.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. And I want to reiterate, because I know you, and when you say about fitting into social society rules, she's not talking about changing who you are, you guys. You're talking about, for instance, we don't take our pants down in public.
Yes, or just being polite.
Rules.
And whether or not you have a diagnosis of autism or anything else.
Right.
Let's say you have a diagnosis of borderline personality or of anxiety disorder or depression or whatever it is.
Yeah.
It still would be inappropriate to attack someone publicly. That's just not okay. So being polite is just one of those things. And that's why I loved how you started this. It's just, you can say whatever you want, but be respectful.
And we welcome that always on our show. It's the reason why, if you watch Stories from the Spectrum, it's why we are the executive producers of that. She and I, because we believe in the power of making sure that everybody gets a voice.
Absolutely.
I get emotional because I think about my dear friend Joanne, who said everybody deserves a seat at the table. That was always the thing that she
Definitely.
Said.
Definitely.
And if you can't be heard over everyone else, you don't get the seat at the table. And that's why Stories from the Spectrum is not our voices. It is not. It is only the voices of people who are on the spectrum.
That's right.
That's it. But, you know, it has to be respectful.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
We would defend any person on the spectrum who somebody was being bullied and saying, you don't get to have your opinion. You don't get to say, we would be the first two people to stand up and say, no, we stand with you on that.
That's right.
So there we go.
Thank you. Thank you for letting me rant now.
No, it's all good. Everybody wrote in prayers for Emily. I love that. Brian said one question. It's been a rough ride of making the decision of choosing the best kindergarten school possible for my almost 5-year-old son in Sacramento. We had to weigh an ambitious high-end academic school for a 2E school, he is super smart, yet compromised heavily with low social skills.
Mm-hmm.
That's what, you know what I read out of that is that you had some great choices.
You did. Yeah, you did.
You know, which is kind of amazing when you think about it, because there aren't always great choices.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know what a 2E school
is,
I'll be honest.
Twice exceptional.
Oh, twice exceptional school. Okay.
Yes.
So I guess, and this is a great question, Brian, and a lot of people talk to me about school placement, and I think it is really, really an individualized thing, and you're lucky that you have these options. That's beautiful. But I think you, and you know, as parents, you should sit down and ask yourself, what are we hoping for? And I'll caution you, because as parents of children with autism, sometimes we want to promote their special skill so much because it actually makes us feel good. Like, we want to say, oh, you know, my child is brilliant in math, and I really want to highlight that. And that's totally fine. And I'll be honest, sometimes individuals on the spectrum who are, you know, brilliant at one subject or another, are, as we can see even right now, are changing our world. So, you know, that's one path to go, definitely, and absolutely a wonderful path. Another path is to say, no, I want my child to be well-rounded in a lot of different areas. And then you choose a different type of setting, which is not, you know, 100% or 90% focused on that, on building the athlete, let's say, mm-hmm. but rather showing the individual more social skills, other types of skills, and so on. You, as the parent, can make that decision and put your child in that program. Whatever program you decide, I think what is really important is to look and make sure that your child is happy when they're in there. That's all that matters, is that they are happy. And it, sometimes a child will be really happy. You know, I've had children who are very, 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 very smart. I just thought of one who I loved, who's an adult. But also, like, what he really always wanted was friends. And so for him, it was really important that we could teach him some of the social rules and so that he could fit into society and so on. In the end, he ended up being a brilliant biostatistician anyway, but
right.
he had a lot of skills that he developed socially, right? On the other hand, I also have had kids that I've worked with who are now adults who are not very social and really are pretty narrow in their scope, but they're brilliant. They're, you know, athlete level in let's say, robotics or some other thing. So none of, it doesn't matter. They're both good choices. But what's really important is that the child was happy along the way, right? And that's probably the most important thing. So whatever class you choose, just go back and see, is my child thriving?
Yeah.
Are they happy? Yeah. And that's all you need to do. And I have to say, Shannon, like, I look at my three kids and you know how different they are from
yeah.
each other. And so they went different paths. But that was the one thing I always looked at was, like, are they happy? And
yeah.
and it's that's what's important. That's what we all want for our kids.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of times we think, you know, there's an IEP meeting and we make the plan for the year and we think it's written in stone, carved in stone. But I love this idea of making sure that they're happy, because here's the thing I wish somebody had told me. If it's not going well,
they're not
going to
be
change.
Happy.
Yeah. You can change.
Yeah.
You can change teachers. You can change schools. You can move.
Yep.
I mean, it's all, like, overwhelming to think about it,
right.
but it's all on the table.
Absolutely.
And I've seen parents do it where their child is just like, you know, it's just, it just seems like so much scorched earth with this school district, and they go, I'm going to move.
I'm done.
I'm
yep.
going to move, and I'm going to move to another school district. And I've never heard anybody be sorry about that.
That's right.
The one year that we were so ticked with one school, so we moved to another school. And the day before school, we had a meeting with the teacher. I hope she sees this, because I just to this teacher. So much so that I included a character that makes fun of her in my one-woman show.
Oh,
but
yeah.
any case,
oh, yeah.
good
so
luck picking. You won't
that.
Know. Anyway, the day before the first day of school, we had a meeting.
Yeah.
And all the warning bells went off. And I was like, this woman is not going to be good. And I was talking to a friend, and she was like, you should go in the morning and tell them that you want the other teacher. And I was like, no, I'm going to give her a chance. And I did, and we were back in every single week. We had administrators involved. And at the end of the year, I thought, I should have listened to my gut.
Yeah.
I should have listened to my gut the first day.
Yeah.
Or I should have done it, but each time I was like, well, we're almost to the holiday break. Let's, you know, they're going to make this adjustment with her. They're going to... No. If you see that it's not working, don't be afraid to go, nope, it's not working.
Yeah.
And try something else.
Yeah.
It's okay to do that. The other thing, can I say, can I jump on here with one other thought? So it's, I love that he's so brilliant, but if he's behind in social skills, what an opportunity at home to do. And if he's school aged, we were told, you know, you guys said to us, pick the bossiest girl in the class.
Oh, yeah.
Start with the bossy gut girl. Yeah. Who doesn't get invited to other play dates, and invite her to play dates at your house. Keep them short. If you can, have a therapist there to facilitate.
Yep.
But make it, because our kids sometimes, they don't know how to have fun with other kids. So everything that they love, like if they love balloons, you fill the room with balloons.
Yep.
If they love, you know, here In-N-Out Burger is a big treat.
Mm-hmm.
So what we would always get was In-N-Out for them and the play date. So the play date, the person wanted to come back.
The best thing. Absolutely. That's
such
a great...
We became the house
exactly.
that they wanted to come to.
That's right.
And eventually we stopped with the bossy gut girl and had two boys.
Yeah.
And then eventually it was three boys that would come every Friday to our house. And I would make all kinds of popcorn and everything. They could trash the living room, play
video games.
There you go.
There you go.
But... that's where he really got his social skills.
That's exactly right. That's and I see that Brian has actually asked us more specifically, what do we think about Montessori?
Oh, there we go.
And honestly, my kids went through Montessori. I love Montessori programs. I'm not sure it's for everyone, but the reason I love Montessori is because they really hands-on, practically have the child kind of learn concepts, abstract concepts, that we don't usually learn in other schools. So to me, a Montessori program is really, really good for kids on a spectrum. Again, as Shannon said, honestly, it makes the individual, the teacher, if they're following Montessori or they're not, that's the person who can make the difference. It doesn't matter. It's just, it's about the person.
Yeah. I was at a conference recently, and a parent came up to me after I was on this panel, and she said, what do you do? Because I was saying, you know, you got to listen to them. You got to listen to what your kids
yes.
say. And she said, but what do you do when what he doesn't want to do is go to school?
Yeah.
And I said, well, what's happening at school? And she said, it's this amazing environment where it's outdoors and they get to look at bugs. And it's this whole thing. And I said, oh, does he like bugs? No, he likes robotics. And I was like, so you would like the outdoor bug school? I would rather die than go to the outdoor bug school.
No, I know.
I don't outdoors and look at bugs in jars. No, thank you.
Exactly.
And that's how this little... And I was like, why are you sending him to the school that you want to go to? You go.
Yeah, that's right.
You go to that school then. Let him go to a robotics program.
Yeah.
Like, why... And how, you know, amazing that she had found in this outdoor bug school, but that's not her kid.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, I see, Brian, you're saying you don't want him to withdraw. You're afraid that a Montessori school will not challenge him and the autism traits will become dominant. I mean, anything could happen anywhere. It really comes down, you know, some of it is the philosophy, but some of it is the individual teacher.
That's exactly what I was saying. It's all about the teacher, honestly. For me, a good teacher is just someone... your child will never forget.
Yeah.
They'll make a big impact, whatever the philosophy of the school is.
But some kids thrive. Some kids on the spectrum thrive in Montessori.
Montessori.
And others,
I agree.
No.
Yeah.
Not happening. I love that Ka wrote in. No, it was Parker who wrote in, said that I was absolutely right about artificial colors and sweeteners because, and I shouldn't laugh because this is terrible. The three-year-olds at my church had red Kool-Aid and then they were hyper. Because I always say to parents, you don't believe me? Just do a scientific experiment. Go to a birthday party where they have red Kool-Aid and they have like one of those
cakes
that has all the frosting on it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And watch the kids drink it and set your watch.
Do you know what? Red Kool-Aid is like the most extreme horrible thing.
I know, and I hate we're to laughing say is it's good. Horrible.
I'm sorry.
It's absolutely horrible.
It is. It's the red color, you know, food coloring and the sugar together.
Oh my gosh.
Just outrageous.
And
yeah.
Do you know they don't allow that in other countries? The,
really?
The red dye that we have here in the United States, they don't allow it in other countries because it makes people go do it. So, and it's not all kids, but enough at a party, you will see it. You can just set your clock.
Oh, yeah.
And you watch them have meltdowns. Now, when I think of our kids on the spectrum who already have enough that they're battling.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like,
and they can't
put the red
detoxify
on top
from
on.
This.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
I'm
so thank you.
You,
Parker, for doing independent scientific research to support my feeling about it. Ka wrote in and said that, yes, sometimes it's the delivery, not the message, in terms of when self-advocates are sending messages.
Yeah.
Okay, I want to get to some other questions that we had that came in earlier. Ka says, good morning, ladies. I want to find a support group through my son. I went to a support group through my son's speech provider and told everyone to come and watch. I've learned so much from you as well as parents watching and commenting. Thank you so much, Ka. But was it she who also said, sometimes I feel very judged by other parents and that I'm made to feel as though I'm not doing the right thing for my son. I think sometimes people forget that it's all individualized.
Yeah.
Amen.
Thank you
for
that.
And hugs to you, Ka. And can I admit that sometimes I'm guilty of this too? Because I don't always know where the line is.
Mm-hmm.
I always tell the story that there was a mom that was in Jem's kindergarten class, and her daughter was in his class, not on the spectrum, but she had a younger son.
Mm-hmm.
2 years later, we talked about autism. We came in and did things with autism in the classroom. 2 years later, she comes up to me in the grocery store, and she runs up to me, and she says, oh, my gosh, I'm so glad that I ran into you. I don't have your phone number. And my son has been diagnosed with autism. I don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to overwhelm her. So I said, you really want to consider doing a 40-hour program, a good quality ABA. You really want to consider, you know, and I went and
dietary
I said, you really,
and, so forth, yeah.
I, and I said all the things, but I said, you really want to consider.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right? And because I thought, I don't want to overwhelm her. I don't want to tell her you have to do
this.
I don't want to say anything is like, you know, hard and fast, black and white, boom, because I don't want to overwhelm her. And I walked away and I was like, look at me. I helped her.
Yeah.
I felt so good about myself until about a year and a half later, same grocery store, I see her across the organic vegetables.
Yeah.
And I'm like, hi. And she comes up to me with a pointed finger in my face and she goes, don't you ever talk to me again. And I said, what did I do? And she said, I came up to you asking for help and you knew that if I didn't do X, Y, and Z, my kid wasn't going to get what he needed.
Yeah.
What you needed to tell me was that I needed to act like my house was on fire and that I needed to advocate for my kid like today was the only day.
Yeah.
And that I need to set up services for him and that I needed to act like it was the single most important thing I had going on in my life, and you knew that.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, but you said to me, maybe you should consider it. So, you know, now I usually say to people, forgive me. You've made the mistake of asking me. I'm going to tell you a bunch of things. I'm going to hope that it doesn't overwhelm you. This is why I wrote the book.
Yeah.
So you could take a piece of it, right? But I'm going to tell you that my truth, what I think, because you made the mistake of asking me.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be point blank about what I think you should do and how hard I think you should work for the next few years, because it's all about now.
Yeah.
And you don't want to wait. I've seen too many parents wait, and I always tell them that story, and I say, I'm never going to have somebody come up and say to me, you should have told me again in my life.
Yeah.
I can't do that. I can't do that. So I think that sometimes people think that I'm judging them. My thing is, I'm going to tell you, and then you decide what you want to do.
Yeah.
You're the parent.
Yeah.
You decide. But I think that sometimes people think that I'm very black and white.
Well, I mean, you know, Shannon, for us, if you've been around as long as I've been around, you will have seen cultural changes in this entire thing, right? And there was a period of time where, first of all, there was a period of time where ABA didn't even exist,
right?
So I lived through that, my friends, you know. There was a period of time where the prominent, prevalent belief was that this has to do with bad mothering,
Oh, yeah.
This has to do with the refrigerator mother, and the mother is being cold, and therefore the child is isolated. I have lived through periods of time where people thought swimming with dolphins, doing blood transfusions, I mean, you know, everything. Yeah. And then you get to a point where you see, oh, do you know what? This is a teaching technique, and if we modify this teaching technique a little bit, it applies to very young kids with autism. And, oh, my God, when they couldn't learn before, all of a sudden we're teaching them everything they need to learn. And, hey, let's spend, you know, years modifying every single skill and listing it and writing it and modifying the therapy techniques. And let's just build a whole thing around this so that every child can benefit. And then I personally got to a point in my career where I could help every child that came because I had, you know, 250 clinics around the country and I could talk to people in other countries and we had affiliate sites and I had 6,000 therapists and everybody was helping and everybody was doing this and we got funding for so many families and people were benefiting and then I brought in all my physician friends and we were helping there too and again it was beautiful.
Yeah.
And now it is starting unfortunately to change again and that just scares me and the reason it's changing right now is two things. One is the whole self-advocacy thing that we're talking about where yeah, it's very confusing for new parents when they hear individuals on the spectrum saying, I was abused. I was tortured. Those words, right? Yeah. And I don't care how bad an ABA program is. I don't think it's torture or abuse. I don't know. Maybe, yes, of course, there are some organizations we know that do actually
I've
do
heard
abusive
the worst stories,
things. Right.
It's nothing like what you do. Nothing
I've
like
never even, I can't even
does.
Imagine.
But there are stories.
I can't even imagine.
There are stories.
So let's assume that that exists too. But that aside, what do you want to do? What's the solution now?
Yeah.
So that's kind of one side of it. And the other side of it is, of course, as you know, Shannon, there's like this, you know, the field is falling apart.
Yes.
The field is falling apart because there are not enough clinicians. I think, in my opinion, clinicians are not being listened to, heard. And so, you know, a lot of the funding that comes into this field instead of going to the clinicians is going to other places. And I won't start that whole dialogue, but I am very concerned for the field of autism because I feel like, you know, 5 years from now, it's not going to be where it was.
No.
It's just not going to be available. And that just makes me sad. Because so there, it's not like the diagnostic criteria are changing or that the prevalence is going down. It just keeps going up.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm still very, very passionate about it. And I thank you for what you said because it actually empowers me to go back and continue to do what I do, which is to tell people what I personally think they should do. And if someone disagrees, that's totally fine.
Yeah.
As long as they do it respectfully.
Absolutely. I mean, there's different things for different people, right? But I'm also afraid right now because when my child was diagnosed with autism, what I knew about autism wouldn't have filled a thimble, right? And I had to,
and
like,
you've learned
hit the ground
so much.
Oh, my gosh. I had hit the ground running like every other parent and look for, and I wanted somebody to just, like, sit down and give me the scoop. Like, what do I have to do? Where do I have to go? Which line do I have to stand in? Who do I have to yell at? Who do I have to beg? Where do I need to lock myself to the front of the building and threaten to stay there on a hunger strike? That's hard for me, but you know what I mean. But you know, I would if I had to. Give up my food? I don't know. But yes, yes. You know what I mean? And I know a lot of parents can relate to that about, like, just tell me, like, what I need to do.
Yep.
There are other parents who are too overwhelmed that even if you said to them, here's what you need to go do, it may not be possible.
Yeah.
They may not have access. Yeah. They, you know, friends of mine who had their husband is dying of cancer while this is happening. It's not, and I don't judge if
or access. Like, they don't have a team of therapists.
You can't even get a diagnosis.
Yeah.
Right? It's hard. This is hard. I think we have to be compassionate towards all people, not judge whose circumstances. I always say, let's try to level the playing field. My group of parents, we thought we were doing the right thing by advocating for insurance. Because you understand, when my son was diagnosed,
there wasn't
insurance funding. So I happened to live in the great state of California. Don't talk to me about California. Because California paid for all of my son's therapy.
Yeah.
And they would send me not a bill, but a reminder every year. This is how much money we paid for your son's therapy this year. Can I tell you, the first time it arrived, and it was $180,000 for the previous year, I had chest pains and had to like lay down on the sofa because I thought they're going to ask for it back, or that they're going to suddenly start charging us for it, because I saw what that year had done for him. That year changed everything. But before that year, they told us that we should let go of hope, and that he was going to be in a special education classroom, and that we were going to be lucky if he spoke. That's what we were told. At the end of that year, they offered him full inclusion in a preschool class where, you know, he thrived. And now he's on the dean's list at college with no accommodations. That's what that year set up.
That's right.
That $180,000. So I lived in the great state of California. Now, that doesn't mean I didn't have to fight for it. I didn't have to. I mean,
of course.
I lied.
I mean, oh my God.
I cheated. I did.
Well,
I did,
and all the fights you had even before that, right? I mean, like with schools and
so
on.
Oh my gosh. The school district was suing us because they were afraid other people were going to listen to me. All of those things. But my group of people, not me, because I wasn't, I was like, I don't think the insurance thing is going to happen in our time. And I was really focused on our time. But there were other better, smarter people who fought for the insurance because they believed that if they could get it funded, that a bunch of people would take advantage of it. And that is not what has happened. And now, you know, when I have stopped being in the position where a parent says to me, well, they offered us 15 hours for our three-year-old, so we're going to take the 15 hours. There was a period of time where I spent all of my time arguing with those parents and saying, you know, look at this. You can get 40. They will give you 40, but you're taking 15.
And why, by the way, there's research that shows that 15 is not going to get your child where they need to be.
No.
And that's we've even given up on that, Shannon. It's like it's not even, you know, nowadays you get 20 hours funded for a child and the service provider can't even provide the 20 hours.
They would like for you to sweep your hair away from your mic. It's muffling your mic a little bit.
Okay.
There we go.
Thank you
for writing that in on Facebook. There we go. Yes. The research about 20 hours.
And so like there's just so many issues, and I just am really just concerned because this is a very, very valuable therapy. And if it goes away, we're gonna be in a very bad place. I was there, you guys. I saw severe children in Camarillo State Hospital, which was an institution that had autism wards with little children biting off their own fingers. That's what severe autism is. And there was no ABA. We hadn't developed any of this yet. We were just beginning to develop these techniques and understand how to apply them to children who were being self-injurious. And now for people to come and say, oh, you know, it's torture and it's this and that, and also for, you know, business people to take advantage of the system that's in place to help families, it scares me.
It scares me, too. And can I just say this? Because I always like to think of ABA as you said, it's a teaching technique. But since I'm a former teacher, I think of it as a box of tools.
It's
a box of tools. And it's like, oh, well, just like when you're going to paint. You can have a box of paintbrushes and a box of paints, and everybody is going to paint the same picture, and it's going to look vastly different, right? And if you have somebody who's uniquely talented with this brush, they're going to do this, that, and the other thing. So when, you know, but you could take the paintbrushes and you could paint something wrong, or you could hurt someone with a paintbrush. If you really put your mind to it, you really could. So we need to be mindful. The thing that I get upset about is when people just say, well, ABA is bad. And I said this last week on the show. Then that's saying that teaching is bad.
Yeah, exactly.
Learning is
that's
bad.
Exactly right.
What you could say is this ABA provider traumatized me.
Right.
Or this person, this behavior technician traumatized me.
Right.
Or this technique that was used traumatized me.
So, and that's a great comparison. So how many of our viewers, how many of you have ever had a teacher who was just terrible?
Right.
Terrible. I've
Absolutely.
Had a terrible
oh,
teacher, unfair,
yes.
You know, angry all the time. Just
oh, and
like
that teacher that Jem had that I was talking about before.
There you go.
Oh, I'd like
there
to be in
go.
A dark alley with her.
So what do you do? Do you stop going to school?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's my point.
Yeah.
It's like, Yes, you could have had a bad experience, but don't take the privilege of ABA away from everyone else.
Exactly. Exactly. And if you have it, if you are lucky enough to have it, fight for it to be the best quality ABA and fight to get as many hours as possible.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. Somebody wrote in and said, my three-year-old is having bouts of the sillies. I love that expression. He will just sit and laugh or spin and laugh until he falls down. At first, we thought it was cute, but now I'm concerned. Is this just a different version of happiness, and should we be worried?
Okay. So first of all, I never want you to be worried, but that being worried doesn't necessarily help in any way. So let's just analyze the situation and figure out if anything has to change in order to take care of this problem. So, you know, sometimes, and you have to observe this over a period of time and do some experimentation here, which I know it's an unusual way to proceed, but unfortunately that's what it is with autism. It is a puzzle. We often don't know what behaviors are. We can only make assumptions based on things we've seen. And one of the things, when you see a child who's just giggling and being a little silly, I would want to rule out the possibility of this being yeast or yeast die-off. That is, so many parents would come to me, Shannon, and say, like, my child just, he looks like he's drunk. Like, he's running around and just like...
Jem was the drunk elf.
There you go.
Yeah.
And you, when they're 2 years old or 3 years old and they're little and cute and, you know, you think, oh, it's just a cute little thing they're doing. Yeah. But the fact of the matter is the child is intoxicated with high levels of toxins in their body, and you can do something about that and change it. And by the way, when they are drunk like that, they're not really learning from their environment. So what I suggest you do is actually go see a nutritionist and or a doctor who has been trained in functional medicine. This is called functional medicine. And they will do some tests. They'll do a urine test, and they will identify if your child has high levels of yeast. And this could have come about from a variety of things. Most of our food, unfortunately, in this country will promote this. But that's what you need to find out. And if you do find out that, oh, yeah, your child does have actually candida, then it becomes very important to treat it, which will involve a diet as well as possibly medications that are antifungal medications. And you might even actually start after you start the diets and the antifungals, you might still see some of this behavior, which is called the die-off phase, which is, this is the point where you're actually killing the yeast, but your child will be silly and giggly and so on and so forth until they're not. Yeah. And once they're not, it's a whole different thing. And it's like, whoa, your child has woken up now and is just completely aware, whereas before they weren't really. So that's the only thing that I can think of is that you want to just rule out. And if you rule that out and know your child's not having high levels of yeast, then I would still be fine. And again, one of the things that I always tell parents, Shannon, is, you know, with typically developing kids, if they're giggly and so on, you can interrupt it with something else and they don't melt down.
Right.
If you can't interrupt your child and if they melt down when you try to interrupt their giggliness, there's something going on there.
There we go. We had to do a yeast, and there are several yeast protocols out there. They're all sort of different because every person is different. We did a yeast protocol. And you know, you get used to your child, especially if you only have the one child and
it's true.
Used to whatever.
You forget.
My child, we referred to him as Busy Pants. Because he was constantly in motion. He never sat still for anything. You couldn't get him to sit in a chair to do anything. We would have to strap him into the car seat or strap him into the high chair because he was busy, 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 busy pants. And we called him the drunk elf, where he would run into walls and he would turn around and laugh and then fall down. And if you smelled his head smelled like a fresh loaf of bread, or his feet smelled like that, and his breath smelled like brandy.
Yeah,
like he'd been drinking, you know?
Unbelievable.
Right? And so then we started a yeast protocol, and it got worse, and nobody had told me about die-off. And I went, this isn't working, and I almost stopped because I went this, and then and it was a midwife who said, I said, we're doing this yeast thing and he's worse. And she said, oh, no, no, did not explain die off to you?
Yeah.
And she said, no, don't stop. You're, means you've yeah. got the right
you're
thing.
You're on the right path.
And then I remember the day, it was like 45 days in. That's how long it took, you guys. And 45 days in, I remember waking up and the house was quiet. And I couldn't, because he even moved in his sleep. He moved his feet in his sleep. And the house was completely quiet. And I was panicked because I thought we had so many locks on the door because he was also a flight risk. And I thought he'd gotten out of the house. That's how quiet the house was. I went out and he was sitting at the coffee table and he was putting together Duplos. We'd had the Duplos. He'd never done it before. And he was sitting there and he was putting them together. And when I walked up and I said, hey, bud, what are you doing? And he looked right up at me and I went,
oh,
what's going on? Like, it felt eerie because my child hadn't made eye contact
yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
And he was still. He was sitting and playing with a toy.
Yeah.
And I'd never seen that before.
I love that.
Amazing. Like, life-changing, right?
That's so interesting.
Okay. Somebody wants to know, adult diagnosis seems like the hardest thing to get. And when you get it, it feels like people question it. Mm. Who can give a definitive qualified diagnosis and how much should it relatively cost? Realistically cost.
Okay, yeah, that's great. So, you know, it is harder when it's an adult because typically adults who are going to seek out a diagnosis are going to be very high functioning, right? Because if they're not very high functioning, this would have been identified at an earlier stage.
Yeah.
So when you are high functioning, the diagnostic criteria are sort of, I don't want to say subjective, but ultimately a diagnostician has to decide, is this symptom present or not, right? So, for example, I was just doing a video on the diagnostic criteria, and let's say just the very first one, you know, the whole area of social communication. There has to be a series of symptoms present in the area of social communication. Now, about a year ago or so, I was diagnosing an adult who, interestingly, it was kind of an interesting experience for me because they wanted to receive the diagnosis yeah. of autism. And so they were kind of almost by textbook telling me all the things that should be in the diagnosis.
Right.
And meanwhile, I was observing that this individual did not at all in any way exhibit sort of the difficulties that you experience with autism, even if it's very, very high functioning. And, you know, the biggest thing that you observe with an individual with autism is they have a difficult time interacting because they don't know all the kind of unwritten rules of social interaction. So, for instance, they won't wait. They will jump into your conversation. They might not look at you when interacting, or they might be too close. They will talk about things that are run-on and not pertinent to the question you just asked. They will. There's all this other stuff that's subtle stuff that actually indicates a difference in social communication. But it wasn't what this person was trying to do, was just trying to get the diagnosis. And actually, I ended up diagnosing them with social anxiety, because there's a lot of people that experience anxiety and they think that it is like autism.
Yeah.
And it's not. So the symptoms of autism, if you have an experienced diagnostician, they can sit with you. It'll be about a 2-hour back and forth conversation where they will ask you a bunch of questions. And I mean, this is what I do. And then I would either at the end of the 2 hours be able to give you a diagnosis or rule out the diagnosis. Or if I'm unsure, I would give you a series of questionnaires to fill out, because you're high functioning and you would be able to fill out these questionnaires. And then with the help of those questionnaires, within an hour later, I'd be able to tell you one way or another, yes or no. And I would be able to tell you your severity level in each of the diagnostic areas. Now, that's an important thing that people tend to miss. In the social communication area, you can have a severity of 1 to 3. And in the stereotypical repetitive area, you can have a severity of 1 to 3. And that's also very important for the individual to know. So that's about the time frame that a diagnostician, and I do not recommend that you try to get it from your family doctor or from a psychiatrist or a psychologist who has not worked with autism before. It is very difficult for someone who is not familiar with autism to be the diagnostician. So I really recommend if you are an adult and you think there is something going on, go seek out someone who has a lot of experience in the field of autism and get your diagnosis from them. What does it cost? Again, it depends on whether or not they have to do testing. I would say, generally speaking, a diagnostician will charge you somewhere around $1,000 to maybe $1,500 or so. But remember, these are licensed individuals that your insurance company should cover. So all you have to do is get in touch with your insurance provider and say, I feel like I need to go see a specialist. Or go see your family doctor and tell them what the issue is, and they will refer you to a specialist. And all of that cost of the diagnosis is covered.
Just don't let them poo-poo you.
Yeah.
I think that that's, because there's a lot of that.
But just like with everything else there is, you know, like you want to go get, I've been to like 20 doctors for my lower back pain and I still don't have a solution.
Right, right. But can we talk about the levels of severity for a second too? Because I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about this. So there's 1, 2, and 3, but all of them, even a 1 means you need support.
Yes. Yes,
and I think this is the. I know I want you to talk a little bit about the 1, 2, 3, but I want parents to realize that sometimes your child gets diagnosed, and you always remind us that there's 2 numbers, but a lot of times people only walk away with 1 number.
And a lot of times people will tell me, I have, my child has ASD level 2, and it's not helpful because the 2 domains are so different. So, like, first of all, 1, 2, and 3. 1 is you need support in that particular domain.
Yeah.
2 is you need, I think, significant support in that domain. 3 is you need substantially significant support.
Right.
So it's just, that's all it is, right?
But the problem right now, as I see it, is that a lot of kids are being diagnosed and the diagnostician says to them, when they say, okay, well, what are you going to give me? My child qualified, but they're a 1-1.
Mm-hmm.
And then the school and the doctor and the insurance say, oh, your child is very high functioning, they don't need anything. And I'm like, very thing says, if they're a 1, that means needs support.
Yeah.
But on the other side of it, too, I think for some of the adults, they walk away and say, I didn't get a diagnosis. I feel like I'm on the spectrum. I have some of these traits, but I didn't get a diagnosis. And I always say to them, are you working a job? Are you in a relationship? Do you, like, maybe you have areas in your life that you struggle with, but have you found a way to make them function? Because in order to qualify for that disorder, you have to need support.
Right.
And
that's
not
right.
Everybody does.
That's right. And you have to have these specific symptoms. Like, so for instance, anxiety disorder, right? Like, so there's a whole bunch of symptoms associated with anxiety disorder, and many of us suffer from some of them.
Yeah.
Many of us. I mean, I woke up at 4 a.m. this morning with anxiety, right? Because I had a rough day yesterday.
Yeah.
So that's a very common thing, but that does not qualify me to get a diagnosis of anxiety disorder, generalized anxiety. It just doesn't, because I do not meet all the criteria. And secondly, because as Shannon said, it is not disturbing my life, right? So those are the things that are very necessary. People forget that. It's a really interesting, Shannon. When you look at the diagnostic manual, it very specifically says, A, you have to meet the following criteria in the social communication disorders area, right, for autism, and there's a bunch. B, you have to meet the following criteria in the repetitive self-stimulatory stereotypical behaviors. Those are the 2 domains.
Right.
C, these symptoms must have occurred before a certain age for you to experience it. And D, it cannot be due to other things.
Right.
And then overall, they need to be debilitating enough, right?
Right.
So these are people, skip all that other stuff, right?
Yeah.
But it is very important, and you're absolutely right. In fact, I think DSM-5 was very specifically written this way so that people would get support, even if they are a 1-1.
Yeah.
And we used to have this problem when people were diagnosed with PDD-NOS, which is the old way, which was pervasive developmental disorder not otherwise specified, which meant essentially high-functioning autism, right? And people wouldn't get the funding they needed just because of that.
Right.
So, yes, so that's kind of how it is. And I do recommend if you feel you have issues, it is important. It's really important that you try to seek out someone who can help you with a diagnosis. I'm happy to, by the way. People have written in to me and said, do you still do that? I do. It's hard for me to fit it in, but I do. And I see people on Zoom, telehealth.
Yeah, but we just had Dr. Melmed on a couple of weeks ago, and he has a center in Arizona where almost exclusively now they diagnose adults.
Yeah.
So I would tell you guys to look at that. We're out of time. I don't know how that happens. It flew by. But I hope that you guys all enjoyed. Did you and Traven talk? Are we showing a rerun tomorrow? He was going to ask you if you want to do a show without me tomorrow, because I'm not here tomorrow.
We'll
figure this out, and you guys will see. Well, I don't know what. But on Thursday, I'm back with Moira Giamatteo for our Let's Talk Movies. Once a month now, we're reviewing movies.
I know,
movies.
I'm excited.
Because
that's
it's
so
very fun for me. It's very reinforcing
that's
for
awesome.
Me.
That's awesome.
And we're two ponies, parents of neurodiverse individuals. So it always gets put through the autism filter no matter what. But that's Thursday's show.
One of these shows, you should ask Sonny to come and join you.
Oh, my gosh. That would be so much fun.
Oh, and he's so knowledgeable about movies.
Oh, well, yeah. We would have a blast with him.
Yeah.
Wonderful. So wait till you hear the things that are making my head spin. Well, because Moira and I were like the Siskel and Ebert in that we don't agree on most things.
I love it. What movies are you reviewing?
So I'm not entirely sure what we're reviewing tomorrow or on Thursday. But last month, one of her top ones that she loved was a show on, is it on Hulu? What is it on? Under the Banner of Heaven. She just thought it was great. I hated it so much. So we're going to talk about that on Thursday because I hated it beyond all hate.
I love it.
And I didn't even want to finish watching it, but I was like, I'm going to finish watching it so I can say I watched the whole thing.
And it
is a giant turd in a punch bowl. So there. But there's a bunch of other things that we're going to talk about as well. But I can't remember off the top of my head. Anyway, we're out of time. But tune in tomorrow to see. It might be Dr. Grampuchet here without me, which that could,
that could be fun.
Then I'll have no job left anymore.
No,
because she's better without me. So I don't know about that. But anyway, we're back tomorrow. But if you haven't already written in, I don't know if somebody's written in to me. If somebody wants a free copy of my book, you need to email me, shannon@autism-live.com, and you have to have your name and your address so Kelly can send you the book. All right.
And just one last thing. Brian asked for contact info. If you don't mind, just send your info to Shannon, and then I will get in touch.
Absolutely. Shannon@autism-live.com. Happy to forward that over to Dr. Grampuchet always. All right, you guys. So wonderful being here with you. Thank you so
always
much.
Always a pleasure. Thank
a
you
delight.
So much.
And we'll be back in some way tomorrow. Until then, give your kiddos a hug from me and one for you too. Bye-bye for now.
Bye, everyone.